Our next speaker. He was a developer of free and open software. Until recently, he was a journalist. He is a digital rights lawyer. I've been told that whenever there's anything about privacy, digital rights in the news, he gets called to comment on this. And some might describe him a bit as a troublemaker for the government. He defends your digital rights and privacy online, but he's also our harbor master here at SHA 2017, our Shaba master. He rescues your rights and privacy online, and he even rescued 5 people from the water during this event already. So now he wants to tell us a bit about what would happen if we would actually treat data leaks as a disasters that they are, as we do in all the other industries and all the other capacities, and what we could actually learn from them. So please welcome Brenno De Winter.
Thank you. Well, the rescue bit is, of course, therefore we have our medical team, and they are volunteering as well, by the way, as a lot of people. Today we are going to talk about the Titanic. I'm going to explain to you why the Titanic is the finest moment in history. Maybe the people on the ship have a different opinion, but for us it's a very nice moment, and in our industry we should learn from that. I fell in love with boating just before the last CCC camp, for the simple reason my wife had a whooping cough. And it was unknown if I was infected or not, so I could not go to CCC camp. So out of boredom, my wife and I started boating a bit. I thought it was so cool that I've been crazy about it ever since. And then I discovered very cool things, just like the undergoing Titanic in this digital sea, the cover of my last book. And I will make the link between boating on one hand and IT on the other hand. And indeed, right here, I'm the Shaba master, because everybody should be at least in safe harbor and use their own privacy shield. This is the boat that I came with. Really cool, you know, it's the finest spot in camp. And you know, you try to do a lot of fun things with kids. And if you look at those this morning, there's one thing that stands out. They all wear life vests. And that they do that because we agreed to do so. And it was kind of hard for us to get to this point. And we saw a lot of disasters. Let me pick out a couple of them. The Skilly disasters. Over 1,400 people died because a bad navigation in storm led to ship that broke down, and people ended up in the water and got killed. And when you look at those incidents, there are two things that stand out. For the UK people among us, I'm sorry, but in most disasters you've got two factors. It's either a storm or the UK. And let me show you a little bit of proof. White ship from England, 300 people died, and they had a conflict over the throne for over 20 years. What happened? They got up in a storm and bad navigation, and they crashed. In the 13th century, during two nights, they had kamikazes, or what they call divine storms. And more than 100 people die. Again, 13th century. Just try to extrapolate that to today's times. That's a significant amount of people. Even nowadays, 100,000 deaths would be amazing. And all of us, we just sat there and said like, okay. And we just left it at that. Well, Her Majesty Sussex in a storm, 498 people. And in 1703 in the English Channel, 1,500 people die. So when people say like, we need a big disaster to change something, the numbers here show that the Titanic in itself is not a special disaster. This was one set of incidents that occurred all the time. Then we had a change of technology. We went from sailing ships to steamships. And all of a sudden, ships were going faster than before. And we caught up in far more incidents than before. And one of the things that was really complicated, how do I enter a port? On the left-hand side or on the right-hand side? Now, if you don't have an agreement on that, it gets kind of complicated, because what do you do? So what they did in 1889 is throw a big conference and try to change rules and set international rules for everybody. So when you're at sea, you stick to the same rules. Well, if it's about a treaty, one country said no, the UK, because there were a lot of ship owners and builders that said that it would be very hard to have common rules. Since if you have common rules, there would not be a level playing field. And especially the UK said, we have our own rules. For instance, we have something to rescue people on each and every boat for each and every passenger. So either a place on a rescue boat or a life vest. So we have rules already. So far so good, you'd think. Then came the Titanic. A beautiful ship, impossible to sink, nothing could possibly go wrong. And on the first voyage, we all know the story, something went terribly wrong, they hit an iceberg, and long story short, the ship sank. And one of the crazy things was, the British rules did not work, because they took away a couple of the life rafts, for the reason that the ship looks nicer without them. And people would be concerned if they were to see lifeboats. So they had extra life vests. But then when the ship started sinking, there were people that would put on a life vest and get in a boat. And that was not agreed. This is one of the important reasons why a lot of people died. Still, this doesn't matter, because they had a second rescue mean. They could shout help. By sending signals out, they would basically shout help, and that would end happily, people would come to the rescue. And fortunately, there was a second ship called the SS Californian that would definitely come to the rescue. However, the men controlling the radio room had gone to bed just before the disaster. And since the radio was mainly used to get messages across to the shore, nobody listened to the emergency signal. So then they started to show off some fireworks. And reports say that fireworks of the Titanic has been seen at the SS Californian. People really enjoyed the fireworks. And it took some time for them to realize that maybe this might be an emergency signal. So the SS Californian turned around, went back, and saw nothing. So they thought the ship had sailed on. After that, society said to each other, okay, this is enough, stop, we don't want this anymore. What was the big difference? It was the maiden voyage of a ship, where there were a lot of important people on board. And you know, 100,000 people dying in Mongolian is not really that bad, but 1,500 where a lot of prominence are among them, that's a big deal. So they came to a treaty called Safety of Life at Sea. And in Safety of Life at Sea, one of the rules was, when you have escape vessels on larger ships, everybody gets a place, period. And if you complain about the bad looks, bad luck for you, everybody gets a place. Everybody has a right to a life vest. Later on, we found out that water around the ship is not enough, and we have to have protection as well on the ship. Why do we know that? Because we investigate incidents now. We look at it and we shout to the world what changed. What needs to be changed. So we have fire protection now. And when you have a radio, you listen to it. It's on. It's not voluntarily, it's on. I have a VHF radio on my ship, and my wife once asked me, can't you turn it off? No. Why? Well, Titanic. you stick to the rules, and by doing that, you can come to the rescue. And so we learn a lot from ships. Who remembers this vessel? What country is it of? What was its name again? Health of the Enterprise. What happened? They didn't close the door. Sorry? Yeah, it's stupid if you don't close the door on the ferry. I totally agree. That's why we at Safe Harbor always close the door on our ferry. But we learned that from this ship. What we learned from the study was that it was the wrong ship at the wrong place. And because of that, it didn't fit the port properly. So what they did, they let water into the ship. So it sank a little bit. And then the cars could go in, and then the ship set off. Since it was late, it used the maximum speed of 80 knots. And there's one specific thing in Zeebrugge where this happened. There's short waves. It's undeep. Since it's undeep, the short waves, water went in, and within 90 seconds, the ship flipped over. We know this all because we investigate it. And we learn from it. And we get people in the audience that say it's stupid not to close the doors. Do we know it works? Well, one of the things we learned also from the Health of Free Enterprise was there was no Mayday signal. They had the radio on board because they had to because of SOLAS. But the captain was knocked out when trying to grab the radio. And basically for that reason, there was no emergency signal. So what we've learned since that is that we built a system, AIS, to follow ships. And we know it works. Remember this ship? Yeah, Costa Concordia. The Costa Concordia, the Italian cruise liner, hit some rocks, tumbled over. And they didn't start to call Mayday. First, the harbor detected there was something wrong on the AIS system, saw the ship turn over, and they say, like, would you issue an emergency? Because the skipper is in charge, and the answer, so if the skipper is in charge, he needs to decide if it's an emergency. And he refused it multiple times. And then when he realized things were wrong, he issued an emergency, went off board as one of the first, and 32 people died. This is really a disaster where nobody had to die. It was a bad judgment call. And what do we learn from all sorts of disasters when we investigate them? There's always one common error we make. It's company or corporate culture. So far on the Titanic, for now. Let's look at the digital sea. Let's first make one realization. If you look at the digital sea, systems are interconnected. There is not a single system. As soon as you're on the internet, you're basically part of the digital sea, you're connected. And that means that if I have a problem, you might have the same problem too. If you agree with me on that one, you realize that we have got a similar issue as at sea. If a different ship, another ship doesn't follow the rules, I might have a bad day at the end of the day. Second thing in IT is we write stunningly bad software. We write crap. This is a nice picture I took of myself when I was in the hospital, and they decided to measure all sorts of things. You have to sleep them for one night, so you get a room where you can't close the curtains, and then they see how you sleep. The next morning, I was on my bicycle home, driving home, and I got a call before I was home that they didn't register anything. If I could come back the same night. I said no, of course. But later on, I asked, okay, what was the problem now? And they said, like, well, we did a software update, and apparently the system didn't work. So I went like, well, there were no indicators, no lights. How should you know it's working? That's a very interesting question. So I thanked the person and said, like, okay, fortunately you're not in a life-saving industry. So don't worry about it. But this software update is similar to, for instance, sailing in a storm. Remember this one?
Décollage. Tous les paramètres propulsifs sont normaux et la trajectoire est normale.
37 seconds into the launch, the onboard computers decided 501 was 90 degrees off course.
The onboard computers decided the vessel was off course. And the interesting part of it is what was the root cause of this incident? Reused software indeed. Bad software, bad choices. And of course, these are just two examples. You know a lot of examples where you do updates and things don't work. So apparently we still have a culture where it's not okay to deliver proper software or to test it properly enough. And then let's look at incidents. I call it same shit, different day. We had a couple of big incidents, and let's start with the WannaCry outbreak we had a couple of weeks ago that hit a lot of systems. One of the interesting things was that a lot of journalists asked themselves the question if WikiLeaks were to blame for this. Because they disclosed that this issue existed. So that would be the issue. Well, we hit a lot of systems, and all of those systems could have been patched if people would have applied the patch. They didn't. The patch was found, by the way, before the disclosement by WikiLeaks. So apparently somebody else found the same mistake. The non-patcher outbreak that came thereafter had a similar issue based on a similar update, and still a lot of companies had not installed the updates. If you look at a couple of years ago, the big hack at DigiNota or the big hack at KPN, the story was the same. Not installed updates. Old broken software. And there are many more examples. With a good friend present here, we went looking if there were VNC systems that were online and did not have a password installed. And at a certain point, we came to a system where the following screenshot, it's a bit hard to read, but first off, on the left-hand side, Windows XP. XP standing for expired. It's very hard to read here, but it says your updates are ready for installation. And behind that, there's a screen that says like certification request successfully completed. So they were making certificates for their servers or for whatever on a system that is not being maintained, and even the updates that were present were not installed. This is basically the industry we work in. Or we start to maintain our remote controllable house systems. I just moved into a new house and one of the neighbors said, I want to have this system. So I went like, oh sure, when you go to bed, I'll turn off the light. And the thing is, it's not a joke, it's true, you know, you can. And then if we look at all these type of incidents, we're all a fan of OWASP. And I'm showing you an old slide, I have a very good reason for that. The 2010 and 2013 list, because we are so damn proud that we make a top 10 out of the same mistakes we make over and over again. And the real competition is, can we find another mistake we keep making and replace number 2 and 3? And then if you look what OWASP states, they state like, it's an iceberg. And one of the main causes for them is that 80% is libraries and 20% is custom code. Or to put it in a different way, most of the incidents are created by bad shit we buy. What do we know of icebergs? What have we learned from icebergs? We map them each and every day. Since 1914. We map icebergs each and every day. So back again to Solet, Solas. We have basic rules. We have learned from our mistakes, and digitally, we have a hard time doing it. So maybe we need to have the same mindset for data. You know, start to push off things like continuous delivery or continuous monitoring, which is not normal by right now. But also have a look at the new rules. When I hear people talk about the new General Data Protection Regulation that is going to be introduced, or sorry, it's been introduced already, but going into effect in May next year, the most of the complaints I hear it's so much so hard to do. It hinders the level playing field. And basically you get all the pre-Titanic arguments. And I want to remind you of something. When people were against the treaty in the UK, the ship owners that were complaining the loudest had a certain list. On top of that list, who were leading the actions against a common treaty was the ship owner that would later build the Titanic. And we've got a lot of standards and options already available where we don't say it's mandatory. So maybe we should start to push it off. Well, if we look at history and how we deal with incidents, I remind you of this. Do you remember the hacking team hack? Of course you do. And one of the interesting things was that they made all sorts of common mistakes. Click on links you shouldn't click on. And basically store data on places that shouldn't be stored. So you could see all the offers and all the financial stuff, etc., including the emails. I want to point you to one email. And that was an email where Zero Day was being sold to Hacking Team. And why is it so interesting? Because we don't update, we don't patch, so it's worth a lot of money. And what does Hacking Team say? Of course, when the Russian guy says, like, you promise not to report the Zero Day to vendor or disclose it for before the patch, obviously, it is not in our interest. So in the underworld, it's clear that people are sharing information because it's worth a lot of money. If you look at incidents, it is not common practice. Okay, we share information after an incident sometimes in the same industry, but not publicly. So apparently, if you've got a blue ship and it sinks, you only share it with the people who have a blue ship. But if you've got a white ship, you don't get the same information. And hopefully you still agree with me, there's one sea and there's one infrastructure and one set of computers, so we all have the same or similar problems. And when something goes wrong, we find it hard to help each other. You know what happens on the water when something goes wrong?
This is Europa Viking, Estonia.
Estonia, Estonia.
Mayday, mayday. Hyvää huomenta, puhutko sä suomea?
Joo, puhun suomea.
Voisitko sä tulla apuun ja pyytä myös Vikingväinin apun?
So, the captain asks if the competition comes to the rescue. I don't have to explain to you that the answer is always yes. Why don't we do that in IT? How can it be that we try to keep it silent and not ask the competition, have you had the same problem? What should we do about it? You know, it's about safety, it's about our information society. And for some reason, it's very hard to do so. So this was the point I wanted you to take away today, to start thinking the same way about IT and dealing with systems as we deal with it with on the water. And it's kind of obvious if you look at all the parameters that there will be a day soon where we have a similar incident where something will go terribly wrong, maybe not a big incident because, you know, you can't, the size, it doesn't say it all, but that incident will ultimately be the cause for a change. Now, the fortunate thing you can do today, there are many programmers here. There are a lot of people that make important decisions to start with a different mindset. Don't be afraid if something goes wrong, shout for help and start sharing information. You know, we know that the other side does it already. I end with this slide for a very simple reason, because you see a lock opening and you see me violating the rules. I'm leaving the lock before the door is fully open. What I didn't show you is that I took for 3.5 hours pictures looking at the lock that wouldn't open anymore because the Windows computer crashed because an update failed. So as soon as the doors opened, I thought, like, let's get the hell out of here. Every lock, every part of information society is basically running on systems that have bad software and bad infrastructure. And most of the infrastructure on Walter is currently maintained from a large distance. Windows systems being poorly maintained sometimes. So that was my point I wanted to make today. Hello.
Yes, it works. So, yeah. I think there's one problem with the analogy, and that is that there are, at this time, billions of sailors. And it's not just the boats that are leaking, it's the people that don't know how to sail.
Yes.
But then again, there's also the openness of the internet that we want to protect too.
I would suggest you to start boating, because on the water there are a lot of people who don't know jack shit what they're doing. That's one thing. But if you go into a next category, your boat goes faster, is larger, carries more people, that type of stuff, you are bound to different rules. And you have to get certified. And the funny thing is, I have a boat that you can use without any license whatsoever. But me choosing to get my VHF license, to get my ICC license, etc., is the choice I made because I realize it's important to do so. So it's still for parts of it voluntarily, that will remain the case. So I think the analogy does match more than, for instance, the aviation industry. But good point that I maybe should have been more explicit about.
I think basically it's the problem that we're facing. It's that it's very, and we want it to be very low level to get in onto the internet to use computers, right? I mean, that's what we want. At the same time, it's that single user that can do a tremendous amount of damage.
Yeah, and now the funny thing is, the group of people here, we are the go-to people. If somebody has problems with their computer, they will come to you. You are the ones that can change mindsets. You know, if you look at, for instance, politics, in the Netherlands there's a new cybercrime law. And that cybercrime law now states that if an incident happens, it will remain secret. So it's very pre-Titanic. Mm-hmm. And this is the state we are currently at. So it won't change if we wait for politics. I think this is the group of people that has the power to do to make that change happen.
Please line up at the microphones if you have more questions. In the meantime, I have one question. So what's the first thing when I got back to work next week? What would you say, what should I take care of?
Is my ship okay? Are my systems, do we stick to the basic rules, the basic mistakes that we all know? And we all know that in most corporations, this is not okay. You know, even with all our procedures and things we have thought of today, we still have systems that we allow on our network that are unpatched, that are unsafe, that are not properly tested. I know one company in the Netherlands that says, like, okay, you're a supplier, that's very nice. We will test your software for free. And then we give you one round to patch all the issues. If you pass that round, we'll buy your software. Now, of course, they are giving money away, but they're preventing disasters from happening. And for some reason, it doesn't resonate in our head that when an incident occurs, it's a small disaster. You know, if we see at a safe harbor somebody swimming into the fairway and we see a big ship coming, we get on the boat and we get that person out. It's plain and simple logic. Digitally, we don't do that.
So I would take away basically two things. First, back to the basic, the thing we complain about to our parents, look at our own system, keep them up to date. And the second part would
be... Yeah, no, I think most people here have the system pretty much in place and okay. It's more or less the corporate culture. Yeah. You know, and if somebody is drunk, gets in the car, you say you don't drive. For some reason, digitally, we're perfectly okay with that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, let's continue. Yeah.
In Germany, there are also two new laws. GDPR, also it's the same, and also the IT Sicherheitsgesetz, so IT security law, which enforces all critical infrastructure to give information about security flaws they have. But this goes in combination with the GDPR, where companies and otherwise authorities can sue companies when they have data leakage beginning in the May next year with very huge fees, which leads to a very weak situation where at least a leak is a very expensive event for also a company. So.
Two things. First off, what you say is you have to report data leaks. We've had that law already a couple of years in the Netherlands, and we have got thousands of leaks that have been reported. Very good. Now it's in a database somewhere at a government body, and we have no clue what's in it. We can't learn from that. So the only thing we know is so many percent is healthcare, so many percent is government, so many percent is industry. Yeah. It is not actionable. What do I learn? What are the common mistakes that we shouldn't make? Maybe they are sitting on the top of a pile of information that could really make systems better. And now basically we've got no clue. So that is the first thing. The GDPR in itself will not change that. That's not enough. Second thing, the fines. I'm not so sure that the fines will really make a difference. One of the things is companies cannot say like, okay, I hire this company and they will take away all the risk. So now what they say is they make contracts and they say like, okay, you're doing this and this for us. If we get a fine, I'm going to sue you.
Yes.
And the company says, oh, that's fine. And they walk to an insurance company and says, and they ask, like, how much money will that cost per year? So there are companies who have insured this risk, even though it's not allowed, but through this loophole, to insure this risk. Third thing, because it's not so that, but it's only in Europe, you see data being manipulated in such a way it's not personal identifiable anymore. Then it is taken to, for instance, the US. They will run a big data process and make it personally identifiable again, of course, with mistakes. But now it's in a different legal zone, and there's little we can do.
Okay.
So?
Please.
What do you think are the right way to create incentives for... If you look at SOLAS, it wasn't, we had this treaty and as a result of that, everything's great. There's enforcement on that. If something happens and someone wasn't following the rules, then they can lose their license, all of this sort of thing. What are the incentives in your mind that need to be in place for the digital equivalent?
When you ask the question, you nearly give the answer. If your ship is lacking something, you're not sailing today. So when the other person was talking about the GDPR, I get nervous about the fines. that doesn't work. But if you say like, okay, you're not processing data anymore until this and this is fixed. You know, when we were building up SHA, the fire brigade comes and says like, if you don't do this, this and this, this tent will not open, period. I think that's far more authority that would work far better than just say like, there's a lot of money I can take from you because I'm going to ensure that and then the issue is away. So be far more an authority in the sense that, you know, if you close me down on data, you close me down on business. And if you close down a ship or put it on a how do you say it in English, you know, keep it to the dock, it's not making money. And that's punishment enough, you know, and it stops as soon as the issue is fixed.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, you're saying you could get into a different law zone. This is why I'm shouting for SODETs. You know, this is something that we should universally arrange sooner or later. And as long as we don't do that, we will get a bunch of IoT devices being thrown on the market from regions where we know that they use Linux kernel versions that I can't even remember anymore. You're saying it would mean that the government would determine what we are allowed or not allowed to do on the internet. We've seen in the shipping industry that basically that's not how it ends up. It means that we need safeguards, just like constitutions. But it's a difficult one. But the current situation will lead to disaster. That is. The system now is broken beyond repair if we don't do anything fundamentally.
Sorry. Mr. De Winter, first, like, real pleasure to see you live on stage after so many years of hearing you on the radio. So, you know, big data leaks, it's all bad. But in my daily life, I just have zero problems with that. I mean, my credit card gets hacked about once a year. Because, you know, I use it everywhere on the bloody internet. But, you know, I never get cleaned out. It's not really big. And at the end of the day, it all gets solved by basically an insurance model. Like, I pay percentages of fees on, like, everything, and that is used to cover the losses of most of these things. And I would say that the reason that people as a whole are not... We are very interested in that, but people as a whole are not interested in that because we don't have, like, big... disasters that help sort of like focus people's minds. Like, people are very bad at comparing the aggregate of like random low probability events versus a very big, even lower probability event. So what I'm saying is, shouldn't we just continue to write shitty software until like a nuclear power plant explodes or something and use that event as our Titanic? No, it doesn't. I've never seen a nuclear power plant explode like in my lifetime near me. Actually, or like a plane fall out of the sky, or like all Mercedes Benzes crash at the same time. That shit just doesn't happen. Shouldn't we just wait yet until that happens and then make a point of this and just not talk about it in the meantime?
I have a little answer for that. I have a little anecdote for that. This is already 20 years old, but I went to a computing congress and was talking to an insurer there about testing software. And he said, oh, yeah, I insure nuclear plants. We test the software within the normal parameters. Whenever it goes outside the parameters, it's not tested, it's allowed to blow up, and the insurance pays. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's only too bad if you're living in the near vicinity of such a power plant. And what was the vicinity again, 300 or 400 kilometers ultimately? So that's more than the Netherlands. So I think it's kind of a risk we take. Well, it's not about personal data alone anymore. You know, go to the Italian village and join the Tesla hacking. On Monday and Tuesday, I've organized a fire truck that we can hack, and the mayor of the city of Lochem realizes that when his fire trucks get hacked, they have no building plan anymore. So they don't know who to rescue, or they have no communications. That's also very interesting in rescue. So, you know, it's so part of everything we do. And where should be the we should be the people that realize that more. That there is, yeah, of course you can ignore it, but it's basically in every part of technology. And then to answer your question, should we just wait until the digital Titanic happens? Of course, that's an option, but I rather choose not to, and you know, stand out and try to make us realize before. But maybe you're right. Maybe it needs to go wrong first. But what we also have learned from a lot of disasters is we make the same mistakes over and over again there as well, until somebody steps up. So one disaster is not enough. And after the hack on Yahoo, after the hack on with 1 billion or maybe even more personal identifiers, Sony them multiple times, and there's this long list. We see the ships go down all around us, and nothing happens. So if we have to wait for politics, we'll probably all be dead before we start to realize that it's not going to do the trick, I'm afraid.
Any more questions? Please step up to the microphones.
And educate people.
So
and if there are no more questions, every day there are free sailing lessons to educate people on sailing at the safe harbor.
Thank you very much.